This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear from a Harvard professor who tried to run for the Democratic nomination for president and get his thoughts on the 2016 election. But first, the TV ad for a presidential campaign, the first one, hit the airwaves 64 years ago in the 1952 race between Dwight Eisenhower and Adlai Stevenson.
I for president, I for president, I for president, I for president. You like Ike, I like Ike, everybody likes Ike.
For president,
hang out the banner, beat the drum. We'll take Ike to Washington.
We don't want John
or Dean
or Harry.
Let's do that big job right. Let's get in step with the guy that kept. Get in step with Ike. You like Ike, I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike for president. Hang out the banner, beat the drum. We'll take Ike to Washington. We got to get where we are going. Travel day and night
for president.
Let Adelaide go the other way. We'll all go with Ike. You like Ike, I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike
for president.
Hang out the banner, beat the drum. We'll take Ike to Washington. We'll take Ike to Washington.
Now is the time for all good Americans to come to the aid of their country.
TV political ads have definitely changed a lot over the years. And joining us to talk about political advertising are former Cincinnati Inquirer photojournalist and video producer and current partner at Chili Dog Pictures, Glenn Hartong, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Glenn's giving a presentation on the dark art of political advertising, 7:30 on September the 28th at the National Voice of America Museum in Westchester. If you'd like to join our conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Glenn and Howard, good to see both of you this afternoon.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Good. That ad for Dwight Eisenhower, Glenn, that's a catchy tune. It gets in your head.
Yeah.
That is a real earworm, isn't it? And it was written by none other than Irving Berlin.
Yes.
And, you know, Howard, despite its pleasant nature, it still manages to get in a few digs at Adlai Stevenson, who was his opponent.
Some pretty subtle ones. I mean, you have to see it to know it. You know, you see this silhouette image of Adlai Stevenson riding a donkey in the opposite direction from this.
He's going the wrong way.
From this big parade of happy people, you know, who are liking Ike. And, I mean, it's a cartoon thing. It was done by Roy Disney.
Right. The Disney Studios did the cartoon, and it has some pretty good visuals in it.
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
Stuff you still see today. You have the firefighter and the garbage worker right. And the butcher and the baker and probably a candlestick maker, if I look close
enough.
There's
even a farmer in this, too, if I remember
so.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, the one thing that about that, that the reason they did it this way was, you know, Ike was considered by most people a very great man, but he was not a great speaker. And they didn't just want to put him on the camera and have him talk. They needed something else. And they came up with this. And, you know, as Glenn says, I mean, it gets in your head. It's an earworm. I mean, it was, you know, something that people were humming down, you know, as they walked down the street. I like. And it caught on.
And so many other ads of the time are, as a candidate, direct the camera,
right.
talking, and he wasn't good at that.
No, that wasn't his thing. I mean, you hear his voice at the end, you know, just saying one line, basically. You don't really see his face. You see a cartoon version of him, you know, during the commercial. But it was extremely effective, and nobody – it's really hard to imagine these days that Dwight Eisenhower was the pioneer – of television campaign advertising.
Well, and poor Adlai Stevenson, because it was already tough enough for him. I mean, he was going up against a war hero and somebody who was universally respected in Eisenhower.
Yeah, sure. And somebody who didn't really have a strong party identification. I mean, it was, you know, up to, I mean, he could have run as a Democrat or could have run as a Republican. You know, he could draw votes from both political parties and did.
Well, it was a largely positive ad, and that changed years after.
Right? Oh, yes.
The negative tone quickly became the prevalent tone of so
not
much advertising.
Not long after, and that's one of the other ads that we'll be getting
but
to.
But that never would have worked in 1952,
no.
Is go after people, you know, on a personal basis like that.
Any idea how Stevenson's campaign responded to this particular ad?
Well, the only stuff that Stevenson did that I know of was the kind of thing Glenn was talking about, where you have the candidates, you know, sitting there looking at the camera and saying his piece. And Stevenson was better. Stevenson was a very articulate man, very intelligent man.
Yeah, if you see, there's a series of, I think they were an Ask Ike kind of format where a typical voter would ask Ike a question and he would respond. He came off rather stiff in those ads.
Yeah, and it was pretty controlled, and it was just little clips, you know, he didn't have to talk a lot.
In the same style as the Ike ad, we've got this one from the 1960 campaign. It was John Kennedy versus Richard Nixon.
You want a man for president who's seasoned through and through, but not so doggone seasoned that he won't try something new. A man who's old enough to know
and young enough to do.
Well, it's up to you, it's up to you,
it's strictly up to you.
But it's Kennedy, 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 Kennedy,
Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy.
Do you want a man with spirit who is not afraid to fight?
A man whose record shows that he will fight for what is right.
A loyal man who'll bring the job a fresh new point of view.
Well, it's up to you, it's up to you,
it's strictly up to you.
'Cause it's Kennedy, 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 Kennedy.
Another earworm? Would you rate that one an earworm?
Well, I think you may have missed it. I think that was about Kennedy. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Pete Reitmeier was counting. He says they say Kennedy 33 times in 1 minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. But again, that one's very catchy. And the visuals on that one are really good, too. It's a lot like Ike ad, sort of the animation. But again, combine it with some photos, and it is really good to watch. There's so many different little visuals that come with you, and they're cut to the music and really fast, and it's very effective.
Yeah, and the visuals are, I mean, you see Eleanor Roosevelt, who at the time was, you know, a very well-respected person. You see a little shot of Harry Truman very quickly. I mean, it's, you know, and then it ends with this very beautiful family portrait of Jack and Jackie and little baby Caroline.
And it's a beautiful, I mean, it's like his perfect family, and it gives that youth and that vigor, you know, they had back then, and it really very appealing.
And you have to remember that, you know, this was the youngest man who had ever run for, you know, or ever elected president.
It does a great job of laying that whole age issue to rest.
Well, and there were a lot of people who were concerned at the time, you know, does this guy have the experience? Is he old enough? Is he wise enough? And they dealt with that directly in the music, you know, in the tune. And, you know, I don't know how effective that was, but, you know, they said old enough to know and young enough to do, you know, that trying to make the point that, look, yeah, he may be young, but he's smart and he knows how to do this job.
Right. And in a way, it was a reverse dig at Nixon, too. At his age, and too seasoned. Who are they talking about?
But Nixon wasn't that old either. I mean, you know, he was only a few years older than Kennedy, but he had been vice president for 8 years.
Do either of you know? Has anybody used this cartoon format in recent years?
Was that the
last we saw that kind of thing back in the early 60s?
I actually did some Google searching because someone talked to me about these two ads. And I said, man, what can Pixar do nowadays with modern music and modern technique? And I did a lot of searching. I've not seen any new animated ads.
Mm-hmm. I can't recall one, no. But you're right, Glenn. I mean, you know, with the technology today, I mean, they could do all kinds of things.
It was interesting. I was talking with the assistant producer, Belinda Kai, and we listened to that Ike ad, and she was asking the question, why don't they do those anymore? Those really work.
Yeah.
Because those get in your head.
Well, you know, now they tend to be, you know, more, you know, if they're not attack, just flat-out attack ads, they're talking to so-called regular folks, you know, talking about a candidate. You know, they're putting them in a context of, I'm the candidate who cares about you.
Well, I'm also looking. I have a list on the presentation about 20 videos I'll be showing, and two of them are positive, and everything else is either an attack ad or except for one. But they're very, very negative, and people complain about them. But the negative ads stick, and they work.
They wouldn't spend this kind of money on them if it didn't work.
Now, didn't the Kennedy campaign also run a longer form ad where they had Henry Fonda talking about Kennedy as a war hero?
Yeah, and they also had an ad. They had an ad for just about everything. They had a Harry Belafonte sitting down and talking to JFK.
Frank Sinatra did an ad for.
Well,
for
he Kennedy, did it. He sang. Yeah, you know, he sang a tune on a couple of campaign ads. But I'm talking about Belafonte actually sitting down and talking,
giving a testimonial.
With Kennedy and talking about things like civil rights and appealing directly to black voters.
I can see JFK aligning himself with celebrities because I think he was the first real celebrity president.
Oh, yeah.
As much as a politician, he was a celebrity.
Right. Yeah. And that's because of his youth and the fact he was, you know, good-looking guy and, you know, had a good, great-looking family.
And then there's this ad. We were talking about the shift in negativity. This one is quite a shift in tone. It's the Daisy Girl ad that was part of Lyndon Johnson's campaign against Barry Goldwater in 1964.
Stakes to make a world in which all of God's children can live or to go into the dark. We must either love each other or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. Boy, the stakes are too high for you to stay home.
That is just really, really stark and so different from what you – yeah, because the visuals are even starker, aren't they, Glenn?
Well, it's amazing. It gives me chills just to hear it. And I've seen this 36 times now. And it starts off so simple, little girl sitting out in the field. She's pulling the petals off of – they call it a Daisy Girl, but it's actually a black-eyed Susan. And she's pulling them off, and she's miscounting, and then she gets to 9, and the frame freezes.
And she looks up.
And looks up, and it does a zoom into the iris of her eye, and the black of her eye fills the screen. And then you're hearing a countdown by someone that sounds a lot like Barry Goldwater. And then – an atomic explosion and a mushroom cloud appears, and it just is.
And then the voiceover by LBJ.
And it is so powerful and so devastating to the Goldwater campaign, and it only played once. And it was on the NBC Monday night movie, and they were playing David and Bathsheba, but ABC News and CBS News picked it up and played it again, and it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the fact that it was only aired once as a paid commercial, but people were talking about it all over the country.
If I understand right, it got a little more mileage, though, because the news media picked up on this and actually turned it into a story. So you saw it on the ABC and CBS nightly newscasts.
Yeah.
So millions more people got to see this ad.
And it played right into the fears that a lot of Americans had in 1964 about Barry Goldwater.
And hang on to that thought because we have to take a break here, Howard.
Okay.
But we'll come back to this. We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Thanks to Michael Rismondo for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining us to discuss political advertising, former Cincinnati Inquirer photojournalist and video producer, and current partner at Chili Dog Pictures, Glenn Hartong, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Glenn is giving a presentation on the dark art of political advertising. It's going to be 7:30 in the evening, September 28th, at the National Voice of America Museum in Westchester. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Howard, before we went to the break, you were talking about the idea that this ad was very effective. There were already concerns about Barry Goldwater being an extremist, and this ad just played right along with that.
I mean, there were a lot of voters who were afraid about Barry Goldwater. They weren't sure about him because of his rhetoric, talking about, the possible use of atomic weapons. And this was serious business, and people were scared. You know, a lot of people were afraid of that, and for good reason.
Well, we can just come off a Cuban Missile Crisis. Nuclear war was a real possibility. I was four at the time. Yeah. Like, even I can remember growing up, it was duck and cover. And
Glenn, I grew up 2 miles away from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and we knew as children that if this happened, we would be vaporized, period. End of story. So people, this is a real concern of people.
And Goldwater had said that he would – was a considerer. He said he definitely would use nuclear weapons in Vietnam. I mean, that was a comment that had a lot of people very worried at that time.
Yeah. I mean, he never would rule out anything in terms of use of nuclear weapons. And the Johnson campaign jumped on this, and ironically, he became the peace candidate. And Lyndon Johnson, of course, was elected in a landslide victory, and then escalated the war in Vietnam to a point, where we couldn't get out.
Was this the first negative ad, the first one that had this kind of a dark, foreboding message to come along? Because we heard those first two examples from Ike and Kennedy that were so cheery and positive. Was this the first one, Glenn, that took this tone?
No, there were some other ads where took slightly negative tones. They took someone to task. Well, so-and-so will raise our taxes. Very normal thing, but this dark a tone where you really attack a candidate on his very suitability to be commander-in-chief. That's the first time that happened, and it's kind of interesting because that's happening in this campaign. There are ads by both sides of Hillary and on Trump attacking each other for can you be trusted to be our commander-in-chief.
Yeah, but Americans have never seen anything like this before 1964, not to this extent.
Any idea why they only ran it one time, Howard?
Well, basically, there was an uproar about it, and they pulled the thing, and basically they had accomplished what they wanted.
Yeah, the Goldwater campaign threw a fit.
Yeah, they went out of their minds. The Republican Party, and
but then it all becomes a news story, so the ad just keeps getting played.
The Johnson campaign and Democrats were smart enough to know, say, okay, we made our point.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken off on its own. It's what they call free media or earned media now.
And nowadays. Now here in 2016, we're still talking about it. Probably, arguably, a lot of people say the most effective campaign ad of all time.
Right.
Well, then we fast forward 20 years to 1984. This was a campaign ad that had a more upbeat message, especially when you compare it to the Daisy Girl ad.
It's morning again in America. Today, more men and women will go to work than ever before in our country's history. With interest rates at about half the record highs of 1980, nearly 2,000 families today will buy new homes, more than at any time in the past 4 years. This afternoon, 6,500 young men and women will be married. And with inflation at less than half of what it was just 4 years ago, they can look forward with confidence to the future. It's morning again in America. And under the leadership of President Reagan, our country is prouder and stronger and better. Why would we ever want to return to where we were less than 4 short years ago?
So we get a bit of a break from the negative campaigning and get an upbeat message. Ronald Reagan versus Walter Mondale in 1984.
And we're all in here giving a group hug right now because it's just so nice.
So
right?
Sweet, yeah.
But life is wonderful.
It was exactly the right tone to hit. Mm-hmm. In that period of time, where we had, people could remember the Carter administration and the troubles that they had.
Well, I'm just going to remember the national malaise.
Yeah, the national malaise. Which he never actually used, but it got hung on him.
Mm-hmm. Double-digit inflation, high gas prices, the Iranian hostage crisis. It was just a bad period.
And this hit the exact right note because it was pure Ronald Reagan. you know, Ronald Reagan was this avuncular figure who, you know, tried to lift the spirits of the American people, get them to believe in America again. And this, you know, this thing had the imagery in this thing is amazing,
it's
Glenn.
It's gorgeous imagery. It's all picture perfect, although it's very white. I'm very aware of that now. Very white. And you see that in most of the old campaign ads. There's not a lot of racial diversity, but it's still a beautiful ad. You got a fireman raising a flag and a bride getting married and the tractors and the very
lots
well
of
shot.
Children, yes.
Hal Reiney, the ad executive, does the voiceover, and it is a pitch perfect, cadence perfect voiceover. Reminds me of like pure Michigan. I mean, it's just, it couldn't be any better.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in the end, it just nailed it for Reagan.
So you think it was a pretty effective ad?
Yeah. I don't think Walter Mondale had much of a chance to begin with, but I think this kind of just
that's where he could afford to take
a
high road. You know, look, I've had 4 years. I'm going to give you four more good years. And,
right.
And I don't need to attack my opponent because I am in such a strong position.
Yeah. I think this just basically ended Mondale's campaign.
Yeah.
And then in 1988, we had this ad from the George H.W. Bush campaign.
As Governor Michael Dukakis vetoed mandatory sentences for drug dealers, he vetoed the death penalty. His revolving door prison policy gave weekend furloughs to first-degree murderers not eligible for parole. While out, many committed other crimes like kidnapping and rape, and many are still at large. Now Michael Dukakis says he wants to do for America what he's done for Massachusetts. America can't afford that risk.
Oh, another Stark ad. And this one, as I remember, sparked a lot of controversy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it sparked a lot of controversy, and it also struck a nerve with a lot of voters. You know, Michael Dukakis came out of his convention with an 18 percentage point lead, and after this ad and the previous ad that was done as an independent expenditure with the Willie Horton story of Dukakis giving him a furlough and then him going to Maryland and kidnapping a couple and raping a woman, you know, you combine those two ads, it was just devastating.
And the visuals make quite an impression in this one, too.
The visuals are amazing because you have this giant revolving gate, like a stadium, you remember, and this line of prisoners, this V line of prisoners going in and going out, and every time the gate turns, you hear a little noise, and you have the drone, and it's a very ominous feeling. Ominous sounding ad with just a visual that you
very gray.
You can't get out of your head. It's a beautifully shot ad.
But this one, you're saying there were two versions of this. Though. The first was the
The first one was a Willie Horton ad about
that actually showed
Willie
his image.
That showed this, you know, really violent looking man, and who had been let out by Governor Dukakis and then had committed some horrible crimes.
And in the revolving door ad, they never mentioned Willie Horton's name
at all.
But everyone knew
what they were talking about. Because the independent expenditure ad had set up this ad.
Controversial, but it was effective, do you think, Howard?
Oh, I think it was very effective. I mean, you know, it was one of those. I mean, there were several issues and several TV ads that were very destructive to Dukakis' campaign, but this was certainly one of them.
Yeah, I have in my presentation, I have a Willie Horton ad. It shows Willie Horton, a revolving door ad, and then Mike Dukakis in the tank. If you don't remember a guy, he was riding around in a tank, and he had this helmet with his name on it, and it was actually a Dukakis event.
But
like
looked
so many,
silly.
He looked silly.
Well, and then they had the Harbor
Boston
ad,
Harbor ad,
which talked about how Dukakis had campaigned on cleaning up Boston Harbor, but after being governor for so many years, they still hadn't cleaned it up yet. So very effective ad, I think, at painting Dukakis. They had him portrayed as a failed liberal governor.
Yes.
Well, Glenn and Howard, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Former Cincinnati Inquirer photojournalist and video producer and current partner at Chili Dog Pictures, Glenn Hartong, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Glenn's giving a presentation on the dark art of political advertising at 7:30 in the evening, September 28th, at the National Voice of America Museum in Westchester. You can find a link to more information at WVXU.org. Coming up, we'll discuss politics, money, and the upcoming debates with a former Democratic presidential candidate. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.